Welcome to the Animus podcast. Today we're going to be talking with the new Animus trainer, Emma Dempsey. We're going to be exploring her journey through health and development and training in the NHS, all the way through to working as her own coach with her own business. She's going to be sharing with us also how coaching men has inspired her to think about how we're raising our boys. So, hey, Emma, it's great to have you here at the Animus podcast. How are you doing?
I'm good. It's good to be here. Thank you for having me.
And I know that you've travelled long and far to be here today.
I've travelled. My alarm went off at 3:30 this morning, and I'm dressed for Scottish winter, and it's like the hottest day of the year. So, yeah, it's been quite a journey, but it's good to be finally here.
Cool. So you mentioned journey there, and it'd be really great just to hear about sort of your journey to this point.
Okay. So, well, my background, professional background, is in health and development. That's what brought me to the UK, actually. I came over to train as a nurse 20 years ago to Edinburgh. I worked as a nurse not for that long, for a few years. And I guess when working as a nurse, I became very aware of inequality. And people who were coming into hospital repeatedly were people often who were had other stuff going on. Less income, being from a vulnerable group, things like that. And I wanted to explore that a bit more. So I went back, left nursing, and went back and did a master's in social development and moved more into that kind of side of things. And laterally, my career was in public health, looking at kind of policy and planning around how we address inequalities.
While you were doing that, or having done that master's, what did it sort of show up to you about the world of nursing?
So it didn't really make me... I didn't really learn anything about nursing from doing the master's, because I'd kind of left the nursing world then. But it taught me a lot about health and inequality, and how inequality affects our health. And inequality, you know, the reasons for inequality and global inequality are, you know, fundamentally an unequal distribution of power and resources. Okay. And that the impact that can have globally, but also the impact that can have on like an individual level.
So when you think about sort of an individual and their lack of wealth or power, what are the sort of things that you notice that sort of gives that indication?
Poorer health, they don't show up to appointments. I mean, that's a generalisation, but less likely to go to appointments, less likely to look after their health, less likely to really move forward in a positive way. This kind of idea that, if I can't change anything, then what's the point? I won't try and change anything. So I was kind of doing that in a work capacity, but as I was kind of, I suppose, developing in my career, I was becoming or being more away from people. And moving towards policy and planning, and trying to influence policy and planning.
So what does that look like, influencing policy and planning?
What does it look like? It's really hard to describe, and you never really know if you're doing it. That was one of the frustrating things. So I would go to meetings where they would be planning, I don't know, transport or education or things like that, and I would be sometimes a lone voice around inequalities, and asking when they were planning, were they kind of taking into account inequality and ensuring that they were addressing that in their planning.
You're there as a lone voice speaking up. It sort of makes me think about coaching and how sometimes we can be the lone voice, or our clients can feel like they're the lone voice speaking up. So how does that sort of that work translate into your coaching work?
Yeah, that's interesting, because I just had like a vision of this kind of, again, powerlessness, you know, in this kind of environment of trying to raise stuff that isn't necessarily a priority for other people. I think the powerlessness thing shows up in coaching all the time, and I find it fascinating. So people come to coaching because they already have a sense that they can change something. But, you know, that's limited, the beliefs and what they can change, and there's this... Once they start believing that they can change, or once they can see that they can change, there's power there, you know, and they go on to do more and change more.
So coaching allows people to see their own power and their own belief in their own power, so they kind of see themselves being able to do things and create change.
Yeah.
And before, you were saying that, you know, often you'd be in those situations and you wouldn't know when you're at those policy meetings if you were creating change. So how did that feel?
It felt really frustrating, and I think that's ultimately why I left, because I didn't know and I felt I could do more or change more at an individual level. So I had all that kind of going on professionally, and then personally I'd had some stuff going on as well. I had kind of life changes, I suppose, or awakenings and things, and I separated from my husband, and various things had happened. I lost a relative to suicide, and just that kind of thing where you stop and you reevaluate stuff. And part of that was going to see a coach. And in the session with the coach, I was feeling really stuck. And when I, in hindsight, when I look back on it, probably very powerless to change. And just in the few questions that she asked me, it was almost like I could feel that power come back. Mm. It's really hard to describe. And like what I know now, that she was asking me catalytic questions, you know. And I went out to the car afterwards and I was like, I feel amazing. I feel powerful and I know things are going to change and I'm going to change my life. And then I thought, I could do that, what she just did.
Yeah.
And I could do it really well. And I went home and Googled Animas. Googled coaching and Animas came up.
Okay, so, yeah. So you've done your coaching training with Animas, mm-hmm. but now you're also one of our trainers.
Yes.
So I'm curious about your sort of training background and the skills mm-hmm. around that that's led you to become a trainer.
I've trained really over the last kind of 20 years, in various roles and jobs. I delivered a community development and health course with the university in Edinburgh, and the NHS was like a partnership, and I've done a lot of lecturing at university, guest lecturing, various training for different communities, a lot of it around health and development and health inequalities and stuff, so...
So it feels like that becoming an Animas trainer just feels like just another step in the growth of Emma.
It feels like a great step in the growth of Emma. So, yeah, I'm totally honoured to do it. And, yeah, it feels good. I like training. I feel, you know, at home, I suppose, in the training room.
And it makes me just wonder about sort of 20 years of being a trainer. What are those? Are there any sort of tips or tricks that you would say for upcoming trainers around, you know, being in that space and being in those training rooms?
First of all, when you say 20 years, I was like, oh my God, that makes me feel so old. But be yourself, relax. I have a tendency to talk very fast because I'm Irish and that's what we do. So slow down. Be yourself, really. You know, it's really nice to be trained by someone who shows their humanity. Go at the pace of the people there, but don't be afraid to challenge. Muck in, have a sense of humour, enjoy it. Like, learning is such an amazing thing, you know. And learning to be a coach is such an amazing thing. So, yeah, enjoy it.
And your coaching practice now, tell me a little bit about sort of, you know, do you have a niche? Who might you work with?
Do I have a niche? No, I don't really have a niche. I always say I coach brave and brilliant humans. When I started, I remember thinking I would have a niche and it would be women of a certain age who had kind of recently separated and made some life changes because I would understand them and all of that kind of thing. And I coach a lot of women my own age around various stuff, but actually it's been a big learning to find that I love coaching people who aren't necessarily like me. I coach a lot of men. I find that really interesting. I think coaching people who I don't fully understand enables me to be a better coach because it makes it more inquisitive and the space more curious.
Okay.
And I'm generally interested in why are you thinking that thing, you know, instead of kind of, oh, yeah, I know why you're thinking that thing.
That's one of the things that I talk about with new coaches, that sometimes we can make assumptions because we think we know somebody, but when we have no idea about who they are and we keep that curiosity, it just keeps that so alive in the space.
I love that.
So you talk about coaching men, but I also know that you have some projects that you run. Do you want to tell us a little bit about those?
The projects with mums and boys. I've got a Facebook group for mums with sons. There's almost 1,000 of us on there, and it's just a really nice group, and we talk about raising our boys the best that we can to be great men, but also emotionally resilient and articulate men. And it's kind of, I suppose, I don't want to say a kick in the face, but resistant to the kind of man-up culture that surrounds us, I suppose. Yeah. So I'm raising two boys. I have my own two sons who I adore, and I guess I am a feminist. Every part of me is a feminist, and I was kind of raising them, you know, to really celebrate women and to understand that women were equal and had equal opportunities. And I was so vocal in that, I feel like I kind of lost sight along the way a little and forgot to celebrate the fact that they were boys with them. Mm. Boys are amazing, you know. And once I realised that, I think I kind of noticed that actually, as a society, we maybe don't do that.
Yes, there was a book I was reading called No More Mr. Nice Guy that talked a little bit about that idea that men sometimes felt that it was wrong to be a guy.
Mm-hmm.
So they were being nice, but that also created lots of mm-hmm. frustrations mm-hmm. and lots of stuckness and that
yeah.
sort of thing. Is, you know, appreciating your own masculinity mm-hmm. whilst not putting down mm-hmm. femininity, but just appreciating yeah. it, being okay with that.
Absolutely. There's a shame. You know, people speak about shame. I do some work with Nick Thorpe, our fellow trainer, who also works around kind of masculinities and stuff, and he talks about kind of the shame, you know. And also in the language that we use, and I see it in my own boys when they come home and they talk about something, and this language that we use around boys and men.
And I suppose coaching just is a great space to explore language, and
mm-hmm.
being a coach and being a trainer, mm-hmm. just notice that language a lot, and it helps mm-hmm. us to kind of go, what's sitting underneath mm-hmm. that? What's really going on mm-hmm. there? Or what's the kind of hidden meaning, or what's that message we're receiving mm-hmm. from that language?
Nice. I hadn't thought of the kind of language because I love words. So, yeah, maybe that's what's intriguing also.
Because I think some of the stuff that I sometimes talk about when we're exploring beliefs is, you know, where do these beliefs come from?
Mm-hmm.
And the fact that it's not just what our parents said, but it's what our friends say. It's what we see on the TV,
mm-hmm.
it's on magazines, we see on billboards mm-hmm. around us. So all of this stuff is mm-hmm. telling us who we should be and what we should be
Absolutely.
And how we should do it. And then we get caught doing that.
Yeah. And that word should. I mean, how many times does that come up in the coaching space? I should. Well,
yeah.
I should. I'm always, well, what do you mean? Well, like, you know, what does should mean to you?
Mm.
So I should, and I need to be realistic, are my two favourites. It's like, oh, tell me about that. You need to be realistic. What is that to you? What is realistic?
Yeah, and yeah, because sometimes that realistic comes from what other people mm-hmm. said is realistic
mm-hmm.
as opposed to what they really
mm-hmm.
feel, which kind of links back to what you're saying about power.
Mm-hmm.
You know, how do we have
yeah.
our own power?
Yeah.
Actually, I'm going to do this.
Yeah. Because when people say I need to be realistic, it's always negative. Or it's like, you know, if I say something, I don't know, fantastic, and people go, you need to be realistic. So it's like bringing you back down. You know, it's mm. a negative thing. But actually, realizing we're capable of anything. You know, don't get me started. I just think as humans, we're capable of anything, you know? We're amazing, resilient, creative beings. And once we realise that, then we get our power to go forward and enable change. And
so I see the passion in you as you begin
well,
to say
amazing.
That.
Well, it's amazing. But you see it. You see people, like, sit in front of you. And you see that power happening. Mm. And you see them, like, flourish in front of your eyes. It's amazing. Honestly, I've worked in health for 20 years and I've never seen the change that I see in the coaching space. Incredible.
So do you have any desire or thoughts around how coaching might fit within the health industries?
I think everyone should have a coach. There is coaching starting to happen. I just became aware of it. It might have been happening for longer in the NHS. There's a coaching bank in where I just left, but that was for managers more. There's coaches being employed in GP surgeries in Scotland. I don't know if that's happening down here, probably.
Well, I know it's one of our ex-Animus students,
mm-hmm.
they've spoken about that they're working with a doctor surgery and
mm-hmm.
they're doing some coaching
okay.
in that surgery sort of on a weekly basis.
Mm-hmm.
So I know that things are starting to,
mm-hmm.
or people are starting to go, hey, how can we use this coaching?
Yeah.
To support patients.
Great. I think it'd be really interesting for two things. So looking at inequalities and addressing inequalities, and yes, we are absolutely affected by our circumstances. And if we're born into deprivation, then absolutely that affects us. And we know that affects us, like at an individual level. And, you know, it's a big thing. But actually, feeling like you have no power, because really, in the greater scheme of things, you mightn't have any power. You can, if we can shift that for individuals, and if we can shift that for enough individuals, then we can get change and culture change. So that would be really powerful. And I think as well, using it for men's health. I know I'm quite passionate about men's health, but using it as a space for men to, as a preventative tool for men to talk about stuff, to talk about their emotions, to talk about how they're really feeling deep, deep down inside, which they mightn't get to do. And I know that's a generalisation, but a lot of men might not get to do that. And especially the areas where I used to work. And if we can do that, to use that as a preventative tool for mental health. I mean, suicide is the leading cause of death for men under 45. So not heart attack or cancer or stroke, suicide.
That's a huge...
It's crazy.
Yeah.
It's crazy. And that needs to change, you know? So I think coaching would be is a great thing. I know it's a great thing. I see it as a great thing for the men that I work with who benefit hugely from it. You know, and they're not clinically depressed or, you know, some men come with anxiety or whatever, but it's like, you know, using it as that preventative model.
Lovely. And so where do you see yourself moving to? Not as in geographically.
I know, I'm like, somewhere hot. where do I see it myself moving to? Well, I want to really develop as a trainer for Animas and be the best trainer that I can possibly be. I just read Rich Litvin's book and his kind of all his ideas around deep coaching just really resonated with me. So I don't know where I want to move to, who I want to work with, but I just want to be a brilliant coach and go deep with my clients.
Yeah.
I guess something we were talking about earlier, this idea of like social, I've come from a background of social justice and things, and it would be nice, be good to kind of stay in that field and maybe coach people who are directly involved in social justice. I had a spurt the other day where I emailed various people who I admired and said, I really admire you. I'd really like to coach you.
Oh, wow.
So some of those kind of people. And yeah.
So if they come,
a couple
come
have,
back
a couple have replied, I just thought, go for it.
And that's brilliant.
It's power.
Reaching out and just saying, hey, I like what you do, I'd like to coach you, I'd like to work with you, I'd like to be involved.
Well, why not? And, you know, you're sitting there waiting for them to come to you. Oh, I'd love to work with that person. Like, they're not going to come to you. You may be in a couple of years when I'm more out there or whatever, but why not just go and say, I think you're fab, let's work together.
I think that's one of those things. So Rich Litvin talks about in his book about, you know, we need to go there as coaches if we expect our clients to go there. And there's something really rich about you reaching out to people that you want to work with, because when you're having those conversations with your clients, you're not doing it from a theoretical perspective. You're doing it from a real, authentic, known space.
And when you have this, like, kind of mutual, or not mutual, but when you love your clients, I suppose. I mean, love is maybe a bit too strong a word, but when you really feel something for your client, you know, and really enjoy working with them, and they inspire you to do better, then you do better as a coach, and then they do better. So there's this like thing going on.
Yeah, because it's not just the client that's growing in the space.
Totally.
We grow as coaches in that space, and
that
grows and develops, and that feeds into everything else.
I love that. I love that. Like, after a really good session, it's like, oh my God, that was brilliant. And I learned loads from that as well. Yeah.
And I also recognise that as a coach, that also feeds into being a trainer, because you start to go, so this is how those models or processes or frameworks show up in the space. And it just kind of gives you new fuel and information around that.
Yeah, absolutely. And it's interesting watching like that kind of delivery of a model to a class, and it's the first time that they've heard of it, and it feels kind of clunky or whatever for them. You know, it's that what is it again? I've gone blank. The conscious incompetence, know, and seeing that, and then but knowing that they will so have that in a few months' time, you know, and that they will be doing it without even thinking, and telling them that, and they're like, oh yeah, I don't know, but it's like you will,
because
no doubt about
that.
Brilliant,
great stuff. So it's great hearing all of your passion around coaching and what you do as a trainer. And I'm just curious about, what was your experience or journey like with Animas?
It was amazing. It was like life-changing. I know that sounds really drastic, but it was. The first weekend, the Foundations weekend, when it was you.
Yeah.
And when I arrived, and just even the richness of the conversations, I was just like, oh, wow, I've like found my tribe kind of thing, you know. And so you did a listening exercise, and it was amazing. I remember just looking at you going, oh, my God, I don't know if I've listened properly to anybody for 44 years.
Yeah, there's something really interesting when we start to go, okay, so normally I'm jumping in here and not actually giving space for listening to happen.
Yeah, it's amazing. I went home that night and just like listened to my kids, and they spoke for ages, and I was like, I don't know if this has properly happened before. So it changed me as a mother, it's changed all my relationships, but I think just going through the course every weekend was just like new learning. Paradigm shifts, like it was pretty a lot of the time, you know, emotions were running high and stuff with very, you know, I think all of us probably went through a wow kind of moment. But yeah, it was the learning to listen properly, and not just to words, but to everything, and just to be in that moment, and that presence module was just like, again, I just floated away after, like on the Sunday evening, floated home, and it was amazing. I got so much from Animas. And then to be asked to be a trainer was just amazing. Like, I feel so honoured. I know I always say it, but I do. I feel so honoured.
And, you know, we feel honoured having you as one of our trainers, you know,
looking
at your experience, the work that you've done, and just kind of going, this feels just like another step, or the icing on the cake, or whatever that phrase might be.
Nice.
Where actually it's not... You're not new to training. You're not new to this work.
Yeah.
And you're just bringing your richness to add to what it is that we do.
Thank you, Robert. Joanna said to me, I think it was halfway through the course, is Animas teaching you how to be a coach, or are they drawing out the coach that was always there? Mm. And I remember just really, yes.
That's lovely. Because I think a lot of that happens during the trainings, that, yes, we teach models and skills and frameworks, but we're also drawing out that thing that's already there. So many people are drawn to coaching instinctively. They kind of feel that there's something there for them, and they kind of come into that space.
Yeah.
Kind of reminds me of the whole sort of Joseph Campbell stuff, where people feel there's more, but they don't quite know what that more is.
Yes.
And so they have to go on this journey to explore and find that more.
And funnily enough, when you said that, I remembered before I started the course and kind of after I'd separated, and there was all stuff going on, I remember thinking, I'm on the edge of something. And I actually said it to quite a few people. I feel like I'm on the edge of something. And I don't know what that is.
Yeah.
And I've just remembered that now.
Yeah, lovely.
Wow.
Because one of the other things, I suppose, with that sort of hero's journey are the challenges that we then have to face as we're going through that journey. So it makes me wonder, what are the challenges that you face going through the journey?
Oh, God. Well, I guess there's the kind of the emotional challenges of exploring who you are and, you know, how deep that goes, and sitting in that space alone with your thoughts. And I mean, I had a coach for a lot of my time at Animas, and after, I'm just between coaches. I mean, it's challenging. It's not easy, growth, is it? I mean, it's worth it
every
bit, but it's not always easy. So I guess that growth in itself is a challenge. It was a challenge maintaining my job that I was in, and coaching, building up my coaching practice, and being a mum, and juggling all those balls that we juggle. Then something had to give, and I left my job.
Okay, that's interesting, because one of the things that Campbell talks about is that when we go on that hero's journey and we start to come out the other side, the world that we lived in is no longer, we're not the same anymore, so we can't exist within that same world. So things shift and change around us.
I need to read that book. somebody asked me recently what was my biggest learning from 2017, and it was that I'm not the person I thought I was for a long time. Does that fit into Campbell's?
Well, yeah, so part of it is just because we go through these experiences, these challenges, or we meet different people. So Campbell talks about, you know, the coaches and the mentors and the tribes that we meet on our journey. And when we come out the other side and we look out into the world, we recognise that we've changed.
Mm-hmm.
And so when we show up in our old spaces, they don't quite recognise us anymore.
Yeah, okay, that's really interesting and absolutely resonates. And that kind of thing where, like, friendships maybe shift a little and relationships. And I suppose the positive of that is like relationships or maybe weren't easy, feel a little bit calmer because I can see, you know, why things are happening or explore things more, or have more tolerance, I guess.
And I'm also curious about, because you've left your job.
Yes.
You're building your coaching practice.
Yes.
What's that like?
It's weirdly calm. I'm weirdly calm about it all, which kind of makes me feel like it's the right thing to do. And I talked about it for a long time, leaving my job. And then once I started delivering the training with Animas, I just thought, it was a no-brainer, really. I mean, it's high risk. I'm on my own financially and all that kind of thing. But, you know, I'm up for a risk or two. I feel braver, you know, from the course. I think probably from going through that journey with Animas, I feel braver. And I suppose that's back to power as well. I feel in charge of my own destiny, you know, the sense of agency, which is really nice and refreshing. And I've been putting myself out there a bit more.
So what's that like? What do you mean putting yourself out there?
Just on Facebook, I've been doing little videos around stuff that I'm really kind of passionate about. I spoke to Jay, we had a chat about social media stuff, and he was just like, just go for it. I was like, yeah, do you know, I will just go for it.
Lovely.
So I did. And yeah, there's that anxiety of when you put the first one up and you go, oh my God, and look at my hair, and oh my God, my voice, and whatever, what am I saying? But yeah, it feels fine. I feel weirdly calm about everything, which makes me feel like I've found my purpose.
Lovely.
Yeah.
Great stuff. So if people want to get hold of you, they want to find you, where would they go? Where would they look?
So my website, Forth Coaching, F-O-R-T-H, not Forth the number, is my main way of contacting me. And on Facebook, I think if you look for Forth Coaching, I come up, it's Emma D. But so...
Lovely, brilliant. Well, it's been a real pleasure talking with you today, Emma. Thank you for coming down.
Thank you very much.
Cheers.